You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Good morning, everyone. You're all spread out throughout the room. This will be fun. Well, can I safely assume most of you were here last night? How many of you, most of you were here last night? Any of you not here last night? Okay, sorry. Sorry for you. We're gonna move on as though you were. So, good luck with that. So, let me just give a little sense of what I think we can do this morning. I would like to just share a few bits of things that will hopefully take some of what we talked about last night and drill it down a little bit tighter. By and large, I think they'll be intuitive thoughts, but it'll tighten it a little bit. And then I want to take the lion's share of our time and just allow you to engage or ask questions or process further, because I want to try and make it so that if you have very specific things that you would like to process, we can talk about those things together. Does that make sense? So that's what I prefer to do, but sometimes I get talking and I don't stop. So we'll do our very best to do that. So the only reason I say that is, start thinking right now, like, I really want a clearer thought about this or something concrete on what to do next with that, and that would, I think, make our time profitable. Okay, so last night, as we looked at sort of that block map, some of you, that's like a brand new thought. Some of you maybe read our book and did that. I want to take a minute to talk about why, like last night, I talk about in three sections for those blocks, knowing somebody's name, to like what are some relevant details or information you know about them, all the way down to what do you think people hope and dream for, and really what we're doing as we move through that is sort of a progression of relationship. That what we're trying to do is move from being a stranger to at least an acquaintance, which the basic framework for that would be to know and retain someone's name. That's it. If you can know and retain names, you've gone a long way. And there's some of you right now going, I'm terrible with names. Well, work on it. Because it makes a big difference. You know it makes a big difference for you when somebody knows your name and retains your name. And it also changes the way that you pray, the way that you pay attention. So that's the simple one that we really emphasized last night. The next one would be moving from some kind of an acquaintance to a relationship. And, you know, when you look through the scriptures, one of the things you can see that Jesus practices, and actually the scriptures seem to have, is a massive emphasis in the New Testament, and honestly is around most of the current world right now, would be the power of sharing a meal together. I'll make a bold statement and simply say this. If I'm not a prophet, but if I were to say what I think would be sort of a prophetic thought for our culture right now would be, I think in our lifetime, one of the greatest means to an evangelistic witness is hospitality. If you look at the New Testament, look at the emphasis of hospitality. I mean, when you look at, for example, the list of things, of the qualifications for an elder, to an American or a Western ear, one of the things on the list that's pretty peculiar is the fact that an elder, according to the list, is supposed to host people in their home. Not just like character, not just the ability to teach, but to be the kind of person that can host in their home, that is hospitable. Now that seems bizarre in our sort of current Western space because we don't have quite as high a value on hospitality. But the scriptures really do. Of course, you read in the book of Hebrews where it says, you know, be thoughtful about how you entertain strangers, because some have done this and they entertain, do you remember? Angels. So, you know, take some time thinking about how weird that is. And so much of what the Old and the New Testament says is there's something powerful about sharing a meal with people. You could make a decent argument in the New Testament, and some have. There's a New Testament scholar named Conrad Gempf. He's at the London School of Theology. He makes an argument that Jesus ends up in so much trouble because of who he shares meals with. That we don't quite see through that lens because we don't understand the value and the power of hospitality, and specifically sharing a meal. But sharing a meal throughout, frankly, most of the world right now is a sign of friendship and relationship and connection. And the culture that we're living in right now is desperate for connection. Desperate. And no matter how many Facebook friends you have, no matter, you know, how popular you can be on TikTok, however that works, there's nothing that's quite the same as sharing a meal with someone, hearing their story, and really the sense of feeling like you've been taken care of. And so, I mean, the simple challenge I would just give to us, and you can just do the math on this right now, is how many people have I invited into my home as strangers that are now becoming friends? And from some of the things I just said, and I could make a longer argument biblically, you can make a strong argument that some of your spiritual maturity and vitality can be measured by this. Can be measured by how hospitable am I, and how well do I host and welcome and care for people that are in my space. Furthermore, how often do I respond to or, you know, take up an invitation to be in someone else's home? Some of you can probably guess, looking at me, that I am racially ambiguous. You can guess. It's a fun game for people to guess what my ethnicity or racial background would be, because you can't guess. So that's why it's fun. Some people, oh, you're obviously maybe Middle Eastern. No, I'm not. Anyway, so people have all these different guesses. I'll take away the intrigue. My father is from India. Now, some of you are like, I knew it. Okay, but my mom, both her parents are from London. My mom is 6 feet tall, blonde hair, blue eyes, and my dad's a 5'7" Indian guy. So if you put those together, that's what you get. But one of the things that my dad would talk about was how he was convinced that when he came to the United States, he came here to go to college, he was convinced that he had done something to offend everyone because no one invited him into their home. Because about anywhere that you live outside of the United States or the Western world, part of your job, like as a citizen, is to welcome strangers into your home. Some of you have traveled outside the U.S. and you know this is true. I mean, if you're anywhere in South America, Southeast Asia, Africa, like it's just, I mean, if you go down the street, you're going to get invited in people's homes like 100 times. It's like a way of life. In that sense, much of the watching world or the non-Western world has a more biblical worldview by way of how they understand what they have and how it's for the sake of others, that level of generosity. Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying all that for simply this reason. This is a ripe, like wide open mission field for followers of Jesus. Now, remember, we're talking about this in progression. I would not recommend inviting someone to your home when you've not maintained like a memory of their name. Because what's also true is in our current culture, I said a bit about this last night, people are, they're just terrified of each other. There's fear. We have so much fear of our neighbors. And so that's why last night I suggested, and I heard some of you take it really seriously, start in your front yard, not the backyard. You can put a fire pit in the front yard. You can put a grill in the front yard. I know that seems strange. It will seem strange to your neighbors as well. But it creates a little bit of a bridge. Try to find a way, you know, some, I can see people of different ages in here. If you're a little older, you would remember how like pretty much every home was built with a front porch. When you look at the sociological development change, and we can make an argument about the suburbanization of America, and there's any number of things to say about here, but just to skip all that, most design where people hang out outside now is in a backyard, and there's at least a 6 to 8 foot security fence. So something has happened culturally in America where our intention is to try to distance, not connect. Whereas pretty much any homes, I mean, you know, in Columbus or anywhere that were built, you know, before the 1950s and 60s, all emphasized a front porch, not a backyard. Because again, the value is for connection. Even neighborhoods were laid out where there would be series of stop signs, like a grid. Like if you're in somewhere like Clintonville, for example, obviously an older neighborhood, it's all stop signs, right? Because the intention was to make people stop and see each other. Whereas if you're in suburban America, everything's throughways. There's as little stop signs as possible because the goal is to try to get away from everyone and get into your neighborhood and go into your garage and live in your backyard. I'm just saying, in other words, that this isn't just an anecdotal cultural like thing that you're like, oh yeah, that's true. Something has shifted where we've created more individual behavior, and I think it means that the ground is fertile for followers of Jesus to buck the trend and to engage people. So that would be first in your front yard. Then, if you've actually known their name, you spend some time in your front yard, you do little projects where you can be together in the front yard where all the escape routes are easy, you can move down the line even further and take the huge, bold step of inviting them into your home. Usually what ends up happening is you go front yard to backyard and then into your home because they can still escape. They're outside. But if you can then have people in your home where you have a meal, you share a meal, and here's what I would recommend. I know that like this church tries to do stuff with in-house churches and be connected. One of the simplest things to do is while you have other people over, to just invite your neighbors. So, hey, we have other people over from our church. I have other friends over. We're going to watch the Buckeyes. We're doing the Super Bowl, whatever it is, right? Like, when you already have a gathering, you say, you can just pile in the sides of this thing. Just come and hang out. Again, the barrier to entry lowers, and odds are the people can connect in that. Does this make sense? And so if you would deem yourself a spiritually mature person, a person who's trying to grow in your life with Jesus, go home and ask yourself the hard question, are we hosting people in our home? If not, why not? Second, what would it look like for us to change our homes? Maybe sometimes you got to buy new furniture. You should always have snacks available, stuff like this, right? Like, that sounds silly, but it's kind of important that you can always host well. Then, in the environments that we already have our friends with us, what would it look like for us to include some other people? And now, once you start to build a rhythm where you're behaving this way, you can start to look at your neighbors. So like my neighbors now, one of the things I say to them is, if you ever see the fire pit going, or you ever see people around, you're welcome to just come hang out. And they do wander in. Now, it's funny because I'm a pastor, like an actual pastor. So we have like meetings and you'll have like a worship night or a training. And so in like rolls Mike, like, what's up? He's like holding his beer, walking in the backyard. And I'm like, hey, Mike, yeah, this is my neighbor. You can come hang out with us. And I'm doing like training on like how we're developing or multiplying small groups. He's just kind of hanging out, watching. And then he'll be like, he'll like wander away because he knows there's always an after party. And then when he can tell the meeting's done, he comes back and just hangs out. Okay, so he's now become familiar with being in the space, and he sort of self-regulates like when it seems right for him to be there and not be there. He's not a believer, not sure what he thinks about faith, but he likes hanging out with our crew. But you know that you really achieve the height of sort of relational connection with one simple term. And you know this is true in your own life. And this is, because some of you right now are like, I do all this stuff. By some of you, I mean three. But anyway, so for you three, here's like the height of sort of like a connected life within your neighborhood. is what I would call, and what I have called, refrigerator rights. This is how you know you're really connected to somebody. You can just evaluate this right now in your own head. Whose home do you feel comfortable enough in that you don't ask permission to open the refrigerator and take something? It's not a big list, is it? And then think of it the other way. How many people do you think have built enough comfortability with you that if they're in your home, they know, I can just open the fridge and take something? That's when I know that we've sort of crossed a barrier. When, like, my neighbors are kind of flowing in and out if we're doing a gathering or doing something, and they're around, and I just see them, like, walk over and grab something out of the fridge, and I'm like, all right, we've crossed into another area. All of this stuff we're talking about, and this is why I think the scriptures emphasize hospitality, it's because there's a free-flowing ability to be connected in our lives, and like I said last night, to the degree that my life is genuinely rooted in Christ, then that's the degree to which I'm easily and regularly and often sharing my faith. Because there's just not a barrier to entry. These are people that I'm spending time with. I know them. They know me. It's easy to talk about the life that I have with Jesus. So can you see what I just did there? Stranger to acquaintance, to relationships, but different layers of relationships by how you share and live space together right now. Now, I know what's starting to happen right now, because I've done this a few times. So as I'm talking right now, some of you are like, what you're trying to say is, you're going to destroy my Americanness, which is I have my little territory and no one gets to invade it. And I'm going to live in my own little small hermetically sealed world and protect that at all costs. Well, here's what I'd like to recommend to you. Like, And this is, we have a chapter in our book where we talk about boundaries for a reason, because when you start to live like this, you do have to be able to look at people from time to time and say, you can't come in my house right now. My wife and I are fighting. We're having an argument. I really need you to leave. Or like, I'm actually trying to like hang out with my kids right now. I actually need you. So I'm not saying that you don't have any boundaries. I am saying that you live with more fluidity so that you can express the gospel more effectively. And frankly, this really will enrich your life if you choose to live like this. Some people have taken this to the extent, and I mean, I know that you guys have this in the life of your church, like ministry houses, but even, you know, my wife and I, we've decided that, you know, our goal is to pretty much have people living with us in different stages of their life because we want to be able to model and live a life in community. Okay, so we just talked about moving down the line, okay? So those are some really simple steps there. People say, I don't like this because you're going to take away my boundaries. Let me say one other thing that people consistently say is, well, how does anybody have time for any of this? And I made sort of an offhanded comment last night, which is quoting from C.S. Lewis, where he says, busy people are actually lazy people. Because they leave the hard work of prioritizing to everyone else. And I was praying for all of you this morning and last night, and I felt like this was the thing that is probably most important for us to think about this morning. Is if I could do anything to myself or to anyone, and so much of the room is younger here, if there's something I wish somebody could have come to me and talk to me about like 20 years ago, this would probably be it. Which is, no one will do the hard work of prioritizing your time and your life for you. You have to do that work. And that at every stage of your life, you will be convinced you are busy. I remember being in college, and I'm an intern, and I'm living in a ministry house, and I'm leading small groups, and I'm helping with youth group, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I'm doing Ohio State, and I'm studying some Bible and doing all this stuff. And I remember I would talk to people and they'd be like, how are you doing? I'd be like, I am so busy. So busy. And then I got married. I remember being married and I would look at single people and be like, you're not busy. Weirdo, you're not busy. I thought I was busy. I wasn't busy. Because now I'm really busy. Because now I'm married. And, you know, now I'm coordinating with someone else's schedule, and we're trying to live our life, we're bringing our budgets together, and we're trying to prioritize our marriage. And I thought, man, I'm so busy. And then I had a kid. And when you have one kid, anybody with kids, when you have your first kid, you look at every married couple that doesn't have kids, and all you say is, travel. And there's an urgency about it. Like, I'm telling you, travel. Look at me, travel. You will not travel for 18 years. Travel. Just get on planes, go anywhere you want to go. Do it now. Do it now. Because you have this, like, this being attached to you at all times, and it poops and it pees and it needs to be fed constantly and it cries and it has weird bedtimes and you're locked in and you're convinced this is the busiest, like there's no time, until your kid grows up a little bit and now you become an Uber driver and you're driving to every practice known to man. My girls play 3 sports. They're in youth group. Like, I mostly get time with them in the car and standing on the edge of a soccer field. And I look at people who have babies and I'm like, you got so much time. It's going great for you. And by the way, you know, now my girls are 14 and 17. And so I look at anybody who has younger kids than me, I'm always like, you know, they still love you. You know, they want time with you. You know, you don't have to like fit in their schedule. They would just do anything to be with you. Just be with them, like walk and talk and hang out and be friends. They adore you. And now I'm like trying to get into their schedule and I'm convinced I'm busy. But then I talk to anybody whose kids grow up and they've left the home and they look at me at the stage I'm in right now and they're like, Jay, this is such a precious time. You know, invest, like, this is so great, and, you know, you just spend all your time, and then they're retired, and then everyone wants to retire, you know, like, man, if we could just do anything, if I could retire, and then retired people are, like, fiddling with the sprinkler system, and then they've got grandkids, and so now they're back into the same cycle, and they're busy, and then you're dead. So, like, here's the thing. Like, like you're always going to have stuff to fill your life. You always are. You have to decide before the Lord, what will the witness of my life be day to day? What kind of life do I want to live? How will I prioritize relationships, mission, life with God? And what I guess I would just want to tell you is that it's something I think that most of the non-Western world knows, which is where you live and how you connect to the people closest to you will make a difference in how your life ends up. About every scientific and sociological study that's done right now, if you've never read, there's an interesting book called Blue Zones that looks at like centenarians, places where there's the most people that live over 100, like a good lifestyle. One of the key lifestyle things they notice of people that live past 100 and still live like a meaningful life past 100 is, are they connected to people that are near them in geography? Where they live like a life, a real life together. Gladwell, some of you maybe read in Outliers, makes reference to this study on how when they look at these places where people live healthy, long lives, they eat, everybody wants to look at diet. Like there's, I don't know how many people in this room, they're like, I'm all about my essential oils and, you know, like, great, do that. But the fact is, like diet and like some kind of like weird oil stuff you do or whatever supplements you're trying, maybe will make up for about 10 to 15% of like what will actually make for health. So much of what makes for health long-term sociologically is like how you move your body and if you're connected to people near you. It's a shocking amount of how many people that live over 100 in really healthy ways, like in, there's like an island off the coast of Italy and people in Japan and there's some folks in the middle of the jungle in Costa Rica And a lot of these people are like drinking like gallons of wine and like smoking all the time. But they're like, I'm not kidding, it's true. Like you can read, but they're deeply connected, invested, and they found ways to lower their stress because of how they move their bodies and how they connect to people near them. It's almost as though God designed us to live connected to people. Almost. But you have to buck the trends of the cultural world that we're living in. You have to choose to prioritize different kinds of rest and placement within the places that you live and do very simple things to remain connected to the people that are around you. Only you can choose that, and you can choose that at any age. The younger you can start to change how you live this way, the easier it will be as you continue to grow and develop in your life. Does this make sense? And there's any number of you that are a little older right now and you're going, yeah, but I don't know, did I miss a window? No, of course not, because when you look around even a room like this, the amount of people in American culture, I mean, there's like 10 couples in the life of our church that have effectively just made themselves grandparents in their neighborhood. Like, you want to talk about commodity in a neighborhood? To be a little bit older, to be a little bit wiser, to be gracious, and to help like all these poor young married couples that are like running around with their heads chopped off, try to figure out how to be parents, it is a massive commodity in our current cultural context. Because there is such a dearth of grandparents and like an understanding of how parenting works. I mean, even as I'm talking right now, I'm watching how many young faces in the room are nodding, going, can somebody just tell me how to live? You can try to do that in the context of a class, but if you're doing that in the context of a neighborhood, you really do have a level of authority that easily transcends if you just make food for people, listen to them, talk to them, pray for them, and encourage them. You will have more authority than you can imagine in a neighborhood. There's a couple in our church that, I mean, literally they just have like little dinner parties like three nights a week and then spend time having lunch. They're retired and they've just built a ministry in their neighborhood, and people just like show up with like their little kids who just like run around, they have toys and stuff, and they just sit and talk to people about their marriage and pray with them. And they're just like bit by bit leading people to Christ simply by being hospitable, gracious, and warm, because the world is desperate for this. So instead of like eating up all our time, I would love to just hear what specifically, because I could talk about, you know, some people, let me give you like a couple things we could talk about if you want. Some of you in this room ask me questions about, well, what happens when you end up at odds with your neighbor? So I've been in my neighborhood and a couple neighborhoods, there's been like lawsuits people have had. And what does that mean to process, you know, like somebody's tree was hanging over, and so then instead of like working out, they sued somebody, and then I'm the pastor, like, hey, can I help? So there's some of those awkward things. And there's also conversations we could have about sharing your faith in the midst of this context. We did a bit of that last night, so we could talk about that. We could talk about maybe different, some of you have different kind of neighborhood dynamics. Maybe if you're in an apartment, we could expand it and talk about like city movements. You know, a lot of this has led into city movements for us, and how do you work with other churches, and how can you sort of build some ways to work together? Most cities, which I know the municipalities in Columbus this is true of, most cities, sadly, the secular world is ahead of this conversation. Most cities, there might be even some of you here that work in local government. Most local governments have stipends and money set aside for you to throw block parties and do stuff to serve your neighborhood. It's already designated. If you just fill out a form, they'll give you money. They'll even block off your street for you to throw a party. In our city, because of all this work we're doing, now if you fill out the paperwork and you're designated as like a city block party, which means you're going to like have chairs and anybody can come and blah, blah, blah. And they have, I think it's now $1,200 gift certificates they give you to for our local grocery store. So their goal is to have 1,000 of these. And then the SWAT team and the fire department will come and like open up their stuff, and kids like crawl around in their fire truck and stuff. So they'll just like help you, and then they'll block off the street for you and maintain it. They just do that because they know the community life, people connecting as neighbors, will change things. Do you know if you know the names and the phone numbers of all your neighbors and you have the ability to contact them, your crime rate will drop by 30% instantly?
That's a sociological statistic. So in other words, like, because think about it, like, imagine you're going home right now, and if you don't know your neighbors, and you just barely see somebody's feet go in like a window, like they climbed in. It's like two doors down. You'd be like, huh. Oh, well. You know, and you just go in your house. Okay, but if you knew them, and you knew their number, what would you do? You'd call them. Hey, I just saw someone climb in your window. Oh, yeah, that's my son. He lost his keys. Oh, okay, cool. We're good. Or they'd be like, no, that's weird. Let's call the police. Does this make sense? That just those little social barriers create massive change. If there's an emergency of some kind, if there seems to be smoke coming out of your house, your odds of connecting and someone connecting with you go way up if you actually know them and you have a way to contact them and connect them. Does this make sense? So these are all simple things that local governments know that the church is slowly catching up on, because that's why the local government's trying to get us to obey Jesus. Okay. I think there's somebody with the mic. Would anyone want to ask? Go ahead. She's right here. Help me. Right here. Keep coming toward me. You're doing great. There you go. Say your name. And oh, wait, let me say one thing about Q&A really quick. I know you guys do Q&A here a lot. I'll give a couple disclaimers. Q&A stands for question and answer, which means if you want to make a statement, this is not the right time. So if you want to ask a question, you can ask a question, and then you're the Q and I'm the A. So then I'll answer. Okay, go ahead. You're up.
And you wanted my name, too?
I would love your name.
Okay, Kelly Schweitzer. And my question is, we've been in our neighborhood 17 years, and we've done this with two couples, I think, pretty well, but the needle has not moved for the gospel in their lives at all. So my question is then, like, what do you do with that? Because, you know, when you were sharing last night, you talked about all these people coming to Christ, and, you know, we're like, that's not happening for us, and we've done this, and we have refrigerator rights with the one couple. So,
that's huge.
So, like, what do you do? Like, after, like, what's the long haul?
Well, here's what I'd want to say first, is what you've done is wonderful. So congratulations, honestly. So we always want the next thing. I just would want to pause and say, can you imagine if every person in this room could say what you're saying right now? Like, what a witness of the gospel. What a connection to people. How much better and healthier our cities are when people really know and love and care and connect with one another over 17 years. So great work, honestly. And I love that you care enough to want to know what to do. That's also great. Like, because there's lots of people that might have what you have, and then they're like, this is fine. But because you have a conviction and a life with Jesus, you care about the gospel, you care about these people, you want them to know what you know, that you want them to experience what you experience. So have you tried and have you been sharing about the life that you have with Jesus? And have you said, hey, you should follow Jesus with me? Okay, so you've done that, which is good, which also doesn't also happen. So here's what I would recommend, and you can think about, is what would it look like to take those relationships just even a little bit deeper? So in our neighborhood, what we've done a number of times is do like stuff around either marriage or stuff around a cause, or we've pulled in our local government to talk about what would it look like for our relationships as neighbors to make a difference in the city. So one of the things we did in our neighborhood is we ended up sponsoring a series of refugee families and hosting them in the life of our sort of neighborhood, and then going and making sure that they were well established in their neighborhood. Now, part of what that did is it brought depth to some of the conversations we were already having. And then you start to ask questions like, why are these people refugees? What are they running from? In Denver, I think we're now at about 2,200 Burmese refugees coming every year. And so we were working with a series of Burmese families. What was really fascinating about that is they were Burmese families that were believers. They're Karen believers. And so what was amazing is to sit with these refugee families as they're learning English. They would like preach the gospel to my neighbors, which is really fun. And then part of the job when you're hosting people as refugees is to help them establish, you know, their way of life in a new place, which meant my neighbors were suddenly involved in a Burmese church plant. And you better believe I leveraged that to death. I'd be like, we got to go support them. Let's go to their church plant meeting. You know, and so we're there and they're preaching the gospel and worshiping and doing different things. And what was really interesting is to see a few of our neighbors really moved massively because they started to watch the lived experience of these refugees as followers of Jesus, which is really fun. Now, that was kind of anecdotal. But what I'm trying to say is, can you deepen? You know, for the other thing we've done with our neighborhood that's really fun, it's all age dependent. So it's just praying and asking for creative stuff. But one was a lot of our neighborhood was small kids. So date nights were kind of a mess. So we went to the local church, you know, it was in our neighborhood, which wasn't our church, and said, can we rent your space and pay for sitters? And we're all going to have like a group date night. That small thing enabled us to connect, and then we had little exercises on marriage, like what are some questions we can ask one another about marriage. There's an experiment Stanford did where it was like 30 questions that if you ask these questions and answer them to one another, odds are you'll fall in love. They did it with strangers, and it was something like 25% of the people got married. It's really, really strange experiment. But anyway... A lot of single people in the room, you're like, now I know. Now I just learned something. Anyway, so what all this neighboring stuff was fine. Where's the website? But we use those questions for married couples and it sort of deepened their relationship. And some of the things in there were around spiritual conversations. And so we pulled together and then talked about and we had a few couples that started to follow Jesus. So it's trying to create a few contexts that might be group, not just individual, that deepen the level of conversation around what the meaning of life is. The other thing is, because you're a part of a church, I would be sort of a classic evangelist. You know, like my ability to talk about Jesus, call people into life with Christ, that's just part of my life. So in our little church world, I am often the guy that just says, put me in the room with some of these people and I'll do what I do. I don't know that everyone has sort of the classic evangelist sort of gifts, right? So it's even thinking about the life of your church and going, who in our church just sort of like helps lead people to Christ? Like it's just a way of life for them. Can I invite them in the side door of some of these environments and have them help deepen and continue that conversation? What do you think of those things? Those things doable?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thanks. This woman here.
Hi there. My name is Teresa Moon. It used to be Wright, and I know your dad.
Yeah, I heard that last night.
Yeah.
How weird.
It is weird.
Yes. It is so weird.
But here's my question. Last week, it was about 8 o'clock in the morning, sitting on my back porch in my PJs, drinking a cup of coffee and reading my Bible. And I was there for about 10 minutes, and all of a sudden there are four neighbors, both male and female, and their four dogs in my backyard while I'm trying to, spend some time with God, which my backyard should be my private space, right? Yeah, right. So
should it? Yeah.
They were totally fine with the fact that I still have my robe on and stuff, but there's a cost to having this kind of lifestyle. And can you talk about that a little and how you work through that?
Yeah, I can. I'll do it in sort of a roundabout way. You know, last night, people grabbed me. This happens again every time we talk about this, where they're like, yeah, this is easy for you because you're an extrovert. And that's true, by the way. But what is true is this is actually, honestly, my wife's ministry. I mean, and she's not the most introverted person you've probably met, but pretty close. And anyone here that's an introvert would know that the sort of classic stereotypes of extrovert and introvert aren't fair. That like extroverts like to be with people and introverts just kind of sit like and stare in the corner. None of that's true. The truth is extroverts, and again, these are loose terms and they work on scales, and so like stop judging me. But like in general, extroverts would like to be in what would amount to more shallow, wider conversations. And introverts aren't like opposed to relationships, but generally will be in focused, deep conversations. So that's what I mean, like my wife is way more effective than I am at her ability to like dial in on someone, hear their whole story, carry them in her heart, do something that's super specialized for them and really thoughtful. It's like a certain gift or a note that she writes that's really purposeful. And people think that they like me until they realize that I'm not her. And her ability to just genuinely care for people so far exceeds anything I've even imagined, let alone done. That really her effectiveness, like in our neighborhood or even just in our church leading, is just it's astronomically higher than mine in that sense. But I can create context and rooms and spaces. So this brings me to your question, which is this. For her, the experiences of people just sort of wandering in and out of our space is really exhausting. Like that begins to wear her down. You know, like an experience like you just described. Like we're just doing our thing, and then there's suddenly people like walking around, they got their dogs and some kids like, you know, sticking pine cones in their mouth, and you're trying to figure out what to do. That is like, that was too specific. Anyway, that I was actually thinking of a moment in my mind, if you didn't see what just happened there just recently. So we have pine trees in our backyard, and Daniel's, my wife's always like, you gotta pick up the pine cones. I'm like, I can't pick up all the freaking pine cones. There's a kid there. Anyway, so that wears her out, and that actually energizes me. So my energy's going up, hers is going down. Now, vice versa, it's right around like, you know, it's after the dinner, like 8:30. I've already done that. I got to be with her. This is cool. Now I want to go and, you know, get ready for bed or whatever. And she's like locked in on somebody, like in the corner, like talking, like, and tell me more about how that made you feel. I'm like, I'm going to go to bed, guys. See ya. You know, I'm out. So I think some of it is recognizing your own temperament and your own gifts and realizing that you hopefully are a part of a team. And I think part of deepening those relationships is being able to learn how to honestly communicate with even people that come in and out of your life when and where your boundaries are. So even with those neighbors, to be able to say to them, hey, I really want to connect with you, but like right now, I need a minute. Or can I connect with you in an hour? I'll come by and say hi. It's being able to, in the moment, define who you are, and they will get to know who you are. So like in our world, if Danielle's sitting on the front porch versus me sitting on the front porch, they approach us differently. So like if my wife, people will walk up and be like, hey, do you have a minute to talk or do you just need a little space right now? With me, they're like, what's up, man? You know, like there's never a barrier to entry. So they, again, just like you would in your own family, this starts to become its own system where people do learn and can begin to adapt and talk to one another. But it sounds like to me, you're probably at a close enough place that you can have an honest conversation to begin to establish how those boundaries work. Does that make sense? And there is a cost to it, but the cost is different for different people and at different stages. Like I start to get exhausted when we've done too many intense, like, we're just like sitting, like rehashing like their horrible marriage. Because, you know, that's the thing is, you become the pastor of your neighborhood. People are going through a divorce. Guess whose couch they're sitting on? A horrible thing happens with their kid. Guess which door they're knocking on? That's when I start to wear out. I'm like, I can't do this tonight with them. I just can't do this tonight. Not tonight. And Danielle's like, but this is the stuff. I'm like, this is not the stuff. This is exhausting. Okay, so like, see, now you're judging me. Anyway, so like, I'm just saying, right? Like, we all have different temperaments, is all I'm trying to say. Learning more about yourself, learning how to establish that within your own marriage or within your own family, and then with people as they're getting to know you, it's just a healthy part of relationships, in my mind. This young man here.
Hello. How does a person deal...
What's your name? What's your name?
My name is Stan.
Stan, Hendricks. Good to meet you.
Yes. How does a person deal with that example that you led it to, the tree and all that? I'm going through that and been going through it for years. My son here said something to me a couple weeks ago, and I felt my joy come back. But what I'm dealing with is I would come home and not want to be there, not come home and see the person that I have to see that's causing me this. I don't want to be angry, but I need it to go away as we're going 6-7 years. And I love how that joy felt when it come back. But now the anger is starting to come back again, and I don't want it. That's all I got to say.
My dear brother, thank you for sharing your heart in front of a whole room of people.
But legally, it's like it's from the enemy, because this person went out and found a tree expert. He happens to be in Columbus, and he wrote the book and has a website. He's the expert, but they've cheated in court.
Well, here's what I want to say. It sounds like you have there's a complex set of scenarios you're trying to work out. So the first thing I would just say is, I'm really glad you're here right now. Like, real transformation only happens in community, doesn't it? Even as we have life with God, we only really find a way to grow and change as we're connected to other people. And this thing called the church. So the fact that you would even be here with whatever you're trying to figure out and go through is huge, number one. Number two, the fact that you'd stand up and talk in front of a bunch of people demonstrates a lot of courage. So thank you. And I am supremely confident that God will meet you and help you in everything you're trying to figure out, and that you probably need a more thick community of people around you right now to help you process. You're not meant to carry these kinds of burdens on your own and try to figure out what's next on your own. And my prayer would be that you get the help you need in this place, but then also even in your neighborhood. I mean, you're sitting with your son. What a blessing. And the fact that you are trying to figure this out with your son in a room like this, I am completely confident that 6 months or a year from now, this will be a lot different. But that doesn't mean it'll stop being painful right now. So all I want to say to you is, tend to yourself, brother, and we can figure out the rest in this community. I think technically there's an actual Q&A person. That's you. You're sitting here going, why'd you take my part away? Am I not important, Jay? Am I not important? So what about me, says Paul. Okay. Okay, we have 8 minutes. Who has the most burning question? Oh, yeah, they're all the way in the back.
Hi, I'm Bev. And I wonder if you make a distinction between being a good neighbor and being a friend. I can be a good neighbor to many more people than I can be a good friend.
Yes.
And I've noticed a lot of people in my neighborhood need a good friend. So I wonder if you make a distinction there.
You have to make a distinction. And here's why you have to make a distinction. Because relationships are about reciprocity. So there's many people that you want to be connected to that don't want to be connected to you. That would be one. Secondly, it's true, there's people that want to be really connected to you that you don't want to be connected to. What we're talking about right now is called church. Come on, can we talk really? I mean, like, you know, I'm a pastor of a fairly large church. Like, everyone would like to be my friend, and maybe even I would like to be everybody's friend, but that's not realistic, especially if I'm taking my neighborhood seriously as well, right? So you're exactly right. You have to be really thoughtful about who you can give your life to and how and what level or depth that relationship can take on. And again, this is the mess of it. This is the mess of it. I mean, things I'm saying right now don't make your life easier. They do make it more complicated, But friendship is sort of a fuzzy term also in our culture right now. I mean, sometimes when people say, are you my friend, what they mean is, will you just endure whatever I do to you? That's not a friend. That's a, we actually call that family. But anyway, so come on, there's some truth there. Anyway, but not everyone can be a friend at the same level or in the same way. In the same way that even in your neighborhood, you're not going to have the same depth of relationship or connection to everyone in the same way. So again, now we're back to a boundaries conversation. What does it mean for me to clarify what time and energy and depth and connection? Now, what I would want to say, though, is if you're a follower of Jesus and you're around people specifically that don't have faith, I think that it is incumbent upon you to see them differently because you have mission. You want them to know Jesus. Number one. Number two, you set the pace of depth, meaning that you should always be the person that's prepared to live more deeply than they are. You're the person that's willing to have more honesty, to have more vulnerability, to have more reality to your life because we know Jesus. And because we know Jesus, it means we know that we can never do anything that would make God love us more. And there's nothing we could do to make God love us less. So we can be relaxed. We can tell the truth. We can talk about the places we're vulnerable and learn and grow. And I don't know how you guys define how friendship works, but I think friendship works by the ability to deepen our awareness and our care for one another at the places of reality. And I mentioned last night that, you know, my buddy Mike, you know, his joke to me was just, every time I talk to you, I feel dizzy. And what he's really saying is, you operate at a level of depth and you call me to a level of depth that I'm uncomfortable or unfamiliar with. And somewhere in there, he's starting to encounter Jesus. And there's parts of that that he loves, and there's parts of that that he's repelled by. Much like Paul says, we carry the aroma of Christ through the stench of death, right? Like, he's encountering the kingdom, and there's pieces that he likes, but there's also pieces he doesn't like because he drinks a little more than he should, and any number of things that when he's around me, he becomes aware of it. And there's times that he does everything he can to avoid me, and there's other times that he's like just sitting on my front porch, like waiting to talk. So I think you're right. You're asking the right question. That's like a third level question because what you're saying is I already know my neighbors. We're already spending time together. Now it's starting to get messy, and some people want stuff from me that I'm not prepared to give. And then there's other things that people that I want to draw in that don't want to go where I'm going. Again, all I want to say is, can you imagine if every follower of Jesus was asking those questions? How wonderful would that be? What if our job as pastors is, we're just engaging people who are so deeply involved in people's lives, they're like, this is this nuanced thing, I'm not sure how to figure out on how to help them follow Jesus. I'd be like, I want to pastor that church. But too often what I'm doing, you know, as a pastor, as leaders, is I'm just trying to get people to like, think about anybody other than their own life and their own schedule and their own stuff. And that's exhausting and sad for them. And it means that the world is in desperate need and we're not reaching. So good questions. Those are really hard. And I like Cloud's work on this, you know, Boundaries book. I mean, it's not like exhaustively theological, but at least gives you some markers. Okay, 2 minutes. There's one who has like, you're like, this one is so good. Oh, hands go down. She's confident. Look at that. She's like, rest of people put their hands down. And she's like, no, this one's great. I'm so excited. I'm anticipating what's about to happen.
Hi, my name is Melanie. My question is, I'm single. My kids are grown. There's nobody else. There's no team.
Yep.
Like you were talking about, I'm 10 towards introversion, but I'm talkative and willing to speak up, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
But this makes an extra dynamic, I think, when you're not in the same situation. So I was really excited because this older, middle-aged single woman moved in across the street. So I'm like, yes, that's somebody I can connect with. This family of, I don't know how many people live in this house on the diagonal that I don't know their names. They were one of my unfilled blocks. You know, I don't know how to connect with them. The 60-something, 70-year-old man diagonal to me, you know, the 25-year-old pierced-up people next door, you know, and then the really loud, annoying neighbors on the side. You know, so it's just like...
Well, so far, you're doing good, by the way. You just, you just demonstrated you care about your neighbors.
Right, but it adds a layer of complexity that I'm just not sure how to navigate. Do you have people that you have worked with who...
Yeah, totally. So here's all I would ask you. And you hold on to the mic 1 second. Here's what I want to ask you. What is an asset? What is something that you bring to the table that is either a talent, a gift, an awareness, a blessing, have that isn't located in any of the things you just described, of any of those folks?
My friends just said something that I make to eat. But
that you what?
That a dish I make that my family makes.
Okay, let's go with that.
Okay, so.
Because again, we have to think about assets, like when we think about our lives.
Right.
And cooking is a big one.
Yeah.
So the ability to say, I'm going to cook and serve people will create connection.
Hmm.
Where are there deficits that you could use help from the neighbors you just described?
Hmm. Yeah, being able to lift heavy things out of my car.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Lift heavy things for me, you pierced up weirdos. So
I love them the best. Actually.
Yeah. I know. You love. They're all great. God, you know, bless their hearts. All that. But here's all I'd say. That took us 10 seconds, and we came up with 2 very easy ways to connect. Right.
Yeah.
And if we spent another hour, I could come up with probably 50 more. What we all do is we minimize whatever stage we're in as disqualifying us from connection.
Yeah.
When usually the very stage we're in is what enables us to connect. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
So like there's a single woman, raised her kids are out of the home, that lives right down the street from us. Well, here's what she has that's an asset to us. She has the ability to be like the cooler, not mom, for real.
Mm-hmm.
And as she's come to know Christ, she just comes over and like takes our girls out for like a cup of coffee and talks to them about their life. And then whenever I see her, I'm like, well, what'd you talk about? And she's like, that's none of your business. So like, and she's like a lovely person. She's a professional woman. So she has like some different things that she can talk to our girls about. She'll swing by and bring some food. She always like, and now of course she has come to Christ, so she's now like, I just want you to know I'm praying for you. How can I be praying for you? She has a different profile, so to speak, in how our family can work and how our neighborhood can work. And we've all taken up the job of making sure that no weird dudes try to attach to her. So if she has like random dude X like rolling up to her house, I'm like, hey, what's up, man? He's like, what? Who are you? Oh, I know her. I'm like kind of like a brother. And they're like, okay, what's your name? You know, anyway. So like I just come in with you. We'll just hang out for a little bit. So like, you know, you get, and believe it or not, I think that does provide a role for her too, right? So it's trying, because she does have a deficit there. We invite her to our Thanksgiving. She's included in different things we do when we bring people together. That provides something for her. So assets and deficits are a good thing to think about, because those transcend any number of other differences. And I'm sure if I spent another hour with you, I'd have some more. Okay, so this thing keeps blinking red at me that I'm 3 minutes over. So I think we have to end. What I would like to do is pray for us. Can I pray for us? And let me just say this. In this room, there's a few of you that you could sit here and talk the way I'm talking. You've been living this way. Every time I teach this in any kind of a large room, there's a few folks that are like, yeah, this is my heartbeat. This is what I live for. Here's what I want to say to you. God has positioned you and placed you in the churches and the communities you're in. Serve and encourage and be a resource to others. There's any number of folks in this room right now that are going to try and flail around, do a bunch of stuff based on being here last night and today, and they're going to need ongoing coaching and help. Be the kind of people that can help in this room. There's a few of you. there's a bunch of others of you that you just feel conviction, you feel bad. Listen, just start anywhere. Know somebody's name, know their names, start praying for them and ask God to lead you into these things. I have supreme confidence as you pray and ask God to lead you, he will. Because this is something he cares about. I mean, I bet if I mapped your prayer life, there's any number of things you're praying about right now that God, you know, he listens because he loves you, but he doesn't care about them. This is something that I know that if you pray, you can pray about anything you want. God's fine with it. I'm just saying there's other things you pray about that we know that God cares about. I think he cares about this because he cares about your neighbors. And he's positioned you and he can reach through you. So those are the two groups I want to pray for. Let me pray for this. So Lord, I want to thank you for those in this room who love you and have already been doing this kind of work. And I pray that by your Spirit, you would right now just wake them up and say, I've called you to this. And I've called you to this to lead others, to help others, to coach others, to serve others in their neighborhoods. And so Lord, just how, in the way that only you can do, by your Spirit, would you come right now and just speak to them and say, I'm talking to you. And you would increase their faith. And Lord, in the mess of it, and you know, we got to hear from some of those, would you give them some creative ways to take another step? To shine the light of your gospel. In a way that's loving and connected and caring. And I pray for those that are like, man, this is like totally foreign and I feel so busy and I don't know how even to begin. God, I pray that you begin to speak and lead. Give them simple steps. Show them just one or two neighbors as they even go home today that they can say, let me just walk over there and say hi. I pray the simplest steps, Lord. For those who already know their names, but they've give them one simple way to create a connection. Working on their yard, having a meal, throwing a little party, something that would enable another step of connection. And I bless in each person here, I bless the gifts of hospitality that have already been given. There's some of you that you know how to make food. You know how to have like the right candles or whatever. And I pray maybe for the first time today you would realize this is a gift that's been given by God. It's not just for my family or my friends, but for my neighborhood. And so would you speak to them and breathe on those gifts for the sake of the places that they inhabit. So I bless you to go and be the church in your neighborhood. Be the hands and the feet of Jesus. Speak words of life, for this world is in desperate need. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.